3 o'clock hour, the Burns and Gambo show. Thanks for hanging out with us today on this Friday afternoon. Gambo is taking the day off. He needs to use all those vacation days before the end of the year, before he starts losing them. So I think he had 2 doctor's appointments, a dentist appointment, and he was going to the movies.
That's a day.
It sounds like someone who's already retired. I mean,
didn't you read the article? He's gonna retire in like 6 or 7 years.
I talk to my parents every once in a while, and that sounds like a typical day for them. Oh, doctor's appointments and going to the movies.
Wow, cut Gambo off right at the knees.
I'm just.
But right it's true.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Moon River.
Oh, wow. Whoa.
I wasn't saying that kind of doctor.
I wasn't expecting that, yeah. But there you go. There you have it. Mitch on the board, everybody. We'll make sure we properly identify that when HR wants to come talk to him. Jordan Bird's filling in for Gambo today, and we appreciate that. This came from Mike Sando on The Athletic. I dug this piece because this, I believe, as he wrote, that expectations drive narratives, mm-hmm. right? Expectations define every single thing we think about sports. Just look at the Phoenix Suns. We started the season with no expectations. They start 7-4. We ramp up our expectations. They go 3-7 over the next 10 games, and we're all disappointed. You know, well, if we just go back to what our original expectations were, nobody should be disappointed at all with the fact they're 10-11, but because we changed our expectations, it changes the narrative. Expectations rule everything, I think, when it comes to how we feel about our team. So what he did was he looked at what Vegas projected for each NFL team, all right, what the over-under was on wins. And then he looked at each team and said, what are they projecting for? What are they on pace for? And is it over or under what our expectations were for the team? The teams that are exceeding expectations by more than 3 wins, there are 5 of them. The Niners, the Bills, the Ravens, the Seahawks, and the Packers are all pacing for at least 3 more wins than Vegas said we should have expected out of them. There are 5 teams that are missing expectations by 3 or more wins. The Eagles, the Giants, the Chargers, the Falcons, and the Bengals. As far as the Arizona Cardinals go, they're relatively on pace with what Vegas said they were going to be. Vegas said 5. They're on pace for 4.7. There is a negative 0.3 gap between what they're on pace for and what Vegas says they're going to end up with. In other words, they're right about where they thought they should be. What'd you think of that?
I mean, I feel like they are. They're right about where we expected. I don't know what the record projection you picked at the beginning of the season, but I think I was at 6-10. So I was actually a little bit more optimistic about this season than what we've transpired so far.
Oh, I think at the station, I think you were among the cynics. I was at 5-11 or 6-10, and I seem to remember being kind of at the low end of the projection for most of the hosts around here.
Yeah, so I probably was even higher than that.
There was a lot of 6, 7, and 8s, I think, and I think I'm like, nah, it's the 6-10 team at best, I thought.
But okay, they're sitting at 3 wins right now, and the Vegas over-under was at 5. Do you see 2 wins left on the schedule for the Cardinals?
Out of these 4 games that feature
home games against Steelers and Browns.
Steelers at home, the Browns at home.
Road games against Rams and Seahawks.
Do I see 2 more?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do.
Really?
I do.
I only see 1. I see them winning either this week against Pittsburgh or next week against Cleveland and then losing out the rest of the 4 games.
They're going to win one of these 2. And because it's so hard to predict NFL games at the end of the season, depending on who is or who is not playing for something.
Yeah.
I think I might be nuts. I think they're going to go 2-2 over these final 4 games. But you brought up a good question in show prep. What do we want them to do? What do we want them to do? And I think you and I are going to be on opposite sides of the coin on this one. Because you would like them to lose. You would like them to improve draft positioning as best as they possibly can. State your case, my friend.
Well, I think you can accomplish 2 things at the same time. I think you can better your draft stock by losing the majority of these final 4 games while still building momentum towards next season. Momentum doesn't have to translate automatically into wins. And specifically, when this whole season has been built around Kyler and Cliff, they can continue to do what they've done for the most good part of this season. be successful on offense and the defense doesn't back them up and they lose games.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's the perfect scenario over this last month. Kyler and Cliff continue to evolve. They continue to look good with the Cardinals offense, put up points, and the Cardinals continue to lose games so that they have a high draft pick and a draft next spring that's going to be loaded with quarterbacks, and there are going to be NFL quarterback needy teams lining up to trade up into that top five, that top 10. Perfect position for the Arizona Cardinals.
Logical, rational, makes a lot of sense. And
now you're going to poop all over.
No. I'm of the belief that you've been producing our show forever. You know how I felt about some of those Suns tanking teams. I was all for it.
Yeah.
Count ping pong balls. Get as many as you possibly can. Do it. I don't know. Maybe it's a karma thing. Maybe it's a culture thing. But I sort of feel like the lessons that I took out of wanting a team to lose was that you're rooting for bad culture to set in. You're rooting for a rotten culture to set into your organization when you start wanting things like that to happen. And it doesn't matter what I want. I don't have any impact on the culture of the Arizona Cardinals. At least God knows I hope I don't. But I think that I feel like coming out of my days of rooting for the Phoenix Suns to lose, if there's one thing I took out of that was that I was basically rooting for a rotten culture of losing to set in, and I don't want that to happen. I want them to try like hell to win every single game from here to the end of the season.
See, but under the scenario that I lined out, that's still accomplishing both things.
Yeah,
By losing the last four games the way that the Cardinals have lost the majority of their games this season, the offense playing well, Kyler looking good, making improvement, but the defense letting them down. Has that created a toxic culture right now up to this point?
No.
No, it hasn't.
No,
so
it has
what's
not.
To say that the last four games all of a sudden now are going to create that culture? I think the culture is for a 3-8-1 team. I think it's already in a pretty decent spot right now.
It was
trending in that direction.
Yeah, at least until this last week's game.
I'd agree with that.
And I guess what I want is...
You don't want Rams losses. You want Ravens losses.
Sure. I want Niners losses.
Yeah.
I want... But even then, I don't mind... And I'm sure a lot of people are going to disagree with this. I don't mind picking 8th versus picking 4th. I understand the quarterback thing. As long as the guy who is making that decision as to who you're taking at number 8, right?
Because that brings up the whole Steve Keim thing again.
If you've got that right guy in place, you should still be able to find a dramatically impactful football player at 8, even if you don't have teams clamoring to get up to get into your spot.
I agree.
As long as you've done your homework and you feel good about yourself, and that's where... They could have the 2nd pick. They could have the 8th pick. If I've got no faith in the guy doing the picking, what difference does it make?
I completely agree with you on that one. And I'm in more of the camp of a change needs to happen at the general manager position. But every time in the month of December, we talk about this, I feel like, every year. Where do you want to win games or do you want to have draft positioning? And then when the spring rolls around, I always feel like it's, well, man, if the Cardinals were 3 or 4 more spots higher, look at the guy they could have gotten. So.
Yeah.
So let's nip that in the bud right now. And like you, to your point, by us saying this, it's not like the Cardinals, all right, we're going to go out and lose the next 4
games. Jordan Bird thinks we should lose.
And as long as the offense and Kyler and Cliff, that's what the whole future of this team is revolving around.
So as long as they keep playing well and they still lose for you, it's
a
winner-winner chicken parm dinner.
To me, that's the best of both worlds,
absolutely. The Air Force Reserve Jerry Colangelo Classic. It's presented by Citi. It's back at Talking Stick Resort Arena this Sunday, December 8th, this year. The Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame. It's bringing you a triple header of matchups featuring Tulane versus St. Louis, St. Mary's versus Dayton, and Liberty versus GCU. Arizona Sports giving you an exclusive $9.87 ticket offer. So head to the rewards page at arizonasports.com for more details. The CEO and president of the Arizona Diamondbacks, Derek Hall, getting ready for another offseason, a different type of offseason. So will the organization approach it differently because of that? You'll hear next here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station. I'll tell you what's interesting about this Diamondbacks offseason so far is that for a team that shares divisional space with the LA Dodgers, which presumably is going to be the all-everything favorite to win the division again next year, right? Especially if they go out and get themselves a Strasburg or an Anthony Rendon.
Probably for the next 5-10 years.
Probably for the next 5-10 years. I am surprised by the number of national baseball writers who keep bringing up the Arizona Diamondbacks and writing about them in these columns about, here's a big blockbuster trade we'd like to see this offseason. Here's five moves that we think should go down this offseason. And I click on every single one of them, and every time I do, Jordan, I think, well, this one won't mention the Arizona Diamondbacks, because really, why would you?
Or it will, and it will be a proposed Robbie Ray trade.
Right. It'll be a subtraction more than an addition, right? It will be a move, and not to disparage the Diamondbacks season. It was a good, they won 85 games last year and were far more competitive than they probably had a right to be. But I'm surprised to see baseball contemplating the Diamondbacks as adders than subtractors, as much as I've seen some of these stories make them out to be so far. It's been interesting.
Well, and especially adding the type of names that would be added. I mean, a couple weeks ago, there was very loose rumors that, the Diamondbacks would be a great trade landing spot for Chris Bryant. I remember reading that a few weeks ago.
Sure.
Now there's another name that's being linked to them.
Well,
today,
there was Marcell Ozuna.
Oh, yeah,
that
of course.
Came out a couple weeks ago, too. This one comes from ESPN.com. Winter meeting trades ESPN wants to see. We've plucked a few of the leading names from the rumor mill and asked ESPN.com's David Schoenfeld and Bradford Doolittle to play general manager. These are trades we want to see in the next few days. Names that make sense, teams that make sense. They mentioned the Arizona Diamondbacks, and like you, if anything, I would have thought Diamondbacks trade Robbie Ray to Team X, Y, and Z for whatever.
Astros, Yankees, whoever.
They've got the Diamondbacks making what I think is a fairly aggressive addition of Starling Marte from the Pittsburgh Pirates in exchange for three prospects. Right-handed pitcher Levi Kelly, right-handed pitcher Taylor Widener, right-handed pitcher Matt Peacock. They talk about Marte. He's got 2 years left on his contract, $11.5 million, $12.5 million the year after that. He's coming off a season in which he hit .295, a .503 slugging percentage. Not much of a defensive guy in center field. Maybe they could move him to the corner, or maybe they keep him in center field, right, as a possibility. Or maybe they move him to left, move Peralta to right, keep Ketel Marte in center field. It'd be a hell of an outfield.
Yeah.
Be a hell of an outfield.
Especially since Starling Marte won a couple of gold gloves in left field.
Right.
So, yeah.
But it paints this picture of the Arizona Diamondbacks as dipping into the farm system, taking a few pieces out of the farm system, and making an addition that helps them right now, which I don't know, in a division with the LA Dodgers seems a little counterintuitive. But nevertheless, very interesting that they would be even suggested they would do it.
It's fun to think about it as the Diamondbacks try to make moves like this. And it also, I think, is a sign of respect from these national baseball writers.
Very much so.
For what the Diamondbacks have accomplished already in, 2 years with Mike Hazen. But it also, speaking of Mike Hazen, kind of seems like they don't know the Diamondback general manager very well. That type of move seems very un-Mike Hazen-like.
They don't know this version of Mike Hazen because we've never had a chance to get to know this version of Mike Hazen. The Mike Hazen we've known is the one working under the heavy, heavy cinder block of a Zach Greinke contract, right? And to a certain extent, a Yasmani Tomas contract as well, because that's still here, obviously. But the only Mike Hazen we've known is the one who does not have a whole lot of spending flexibility going into the offseason. I don't know what $30 million to spend Mike Hazen looks like. I don't know if baseball knows what $30 million to spend Mike Hazen looks like.
But just considering the circumstances of what is here in Arizona, and the reason why he was hamstrung was because that the Diamondbacks are not a big market, big money team. To me, it's more logical for the Arizona Diamondbacks, and maybe this is more of me projecting than what I actually think Hazen would do, but to me, it's more logical for them to utilize that money on multiple players, multiple areas of need, than push all your chips into the center of the table for one guy.
And that is something that Derek Hall, the Diamondback beat writers, Zach Buchanan, Nick Pecoro, Steve Gilbert, they caught up with Derek Hall at a charity function that he was hosting. The Diamondbacks do this every year where they give out toys and backpacks to underprivileged kids. I've been to a few of them. They're actually very, very cool. It's a very good thing that Diamondbacks do. And Derek spoke at length about kind of what they're going to do. And not in specifics, obviously, but in generalities. And when you stop me anytime you want to talk about one of these. The difference in payroll from last year to this year is about $30 million. And yes, they plan to use all of that space. The payroll will be right where it's been, which means they've got about $30 million to spend. Mike Hazen and his staff would, in the words of Derek, prefer role players on modest deals rather than spending it all on one guy. Quote, would we put it all in on one big free agent? Doubtful. We're probably going to look at multiple guys that we're going to bring in to compete. Now, $30 million to one guy, you're talking about Anthony Rendon, you're talking about Gerrit Cole, they're obviously not going to do that. But spending $11 million to bring in a guy like Starling Marte, right? Or $9 or $10 million to bring in a Nicholas Castellanos to play right field for you, that's not, you know, there's some separation in there between those two ideas.
And I think about it in terms with the way that you set up this segment with the LA Dodgers and talking about them as this team. If you're the Arizona Diamondbacks, does Starling Marte or even Marcelo Zuna, does that one move all of a sudden now put you at the top of the NL West division? No.
No.
You're fighting a game, you're fighting an underdog game, and you're going to have to be creative with it and not play the same type of game that the Dodgers are.
There's a lot more in here. He would try to avoid dipping into the minor league system, but because they have depth, they feel like they can do it, and they have talked internally about extending Nick Ahmed, which I think is something they're going to do. I want to find out how the school where my kids went to high school going to do this weekend in the high school playoffs. And for that, I want to check in with the Dean of High School Sports, Kevin McCabe.
The Friday Night Spotlight. 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Campo Verde Coyotes, K-Mac. What do you got for me?
Yeah, I know you bought a bunch of cookie dough and you bought a bunch of those, you know, safe cards and all. You've invested more. I know how that goes when you have kids going to that school. So that's your school, Campo Verde, baby. And
I love it. I have supported those athletic programs. I've got more discount cards to some burros that I know what to do with. Yes. I'll never eat that much Mexican food in my life. Yes.
They're great. They're calling them the Fighting Ragsdales, the Fighting Max Ragsdales. And they're part of a big championship weekend. We're crowning five champions between tonight and tomorrow. Williams Field will play Campo Verde tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock at Sun Devil Stadium. Max Ragsdale, the head coach there, got them up off the mat. They lost three in a row. They've now won four in a row and are playing for the championship game. And really exciting for your alma mater, for your kids. It all kicks off tonight, though, at Sun Devil Stadium. We've got East versus West. West Side, Liberty from Peoria. Give me Liberty or give me Death. They get Red Mountain from Mesa. That's at 7 o'clock tonight at Sun Devil Stadium. We've also got the 2A and 4A championship games tonight. And then, as I mentioned, tomorrow morning at 11, 5A title game, and then the biggie, the one that people have been waiting for years for, the Open Championship featuring Saguaro, the Sabercats, six-time 4A state champions, taking on three-time 6A state champions, Chandler. The two big dogs going head-to-head at 4 o'clock at Sun Devil Stadium. I'll be there all weekend. We're going to do the radio show from high atop Frank Cush Field tomorrow from 9 to 11, wrap it all up, parade of champions. We'll have them all on the air. And we'll also, David Hines, the executive director of the Arizona Interscholastic Association, will come by, kind of a state of the union. We had a big fight in basketball this week that went viral and got all the attention nationally. We'll talk about that. And we'll also talk about locations and sites for future state championships. My suggestion, why not play all these games at Chase Field on the turf down there? That's my thought. But nobody ever listens to me. Guys, are you listening? Guys, hey, guys, nobody ever listens to me. Guys.
Kevin McCabe, everybody. We listen to you, Kevin.
I love it.
You know what? You've got some power. You're the dean of high school athletes. Go make it happen. You're the dean of high school football.
I wanted to make
that Chase Field thing happen.
Gambos for some Louis Vuitton shoes or Gucci shoes or boots, something like that. He's making all these deals. I want one of those deals.
Well, maybe if you make a basket in his backyard, you too can win a pair of Gucci boots. Yeah, it's possible. It's possible. Kevin McCabe, all everybody. Right. He's going to have his big high school show tomorrow coming up with all the playoffs. playoffs going on this weekend. Make sure you tune in tomorrow morning here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo Show, the national perception of this year's Cardinals team. We'll find out, asking ESPN's Jeremy Fowler that next here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. The Burns and Gambo Show on this Football Friday here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station. The Arizona Cardinals getting ready to take on the Pittsburgh Steelers on Sunday.
And what does that mean for... No, I'm sorry. I just thought being in this chair, I had to take over that role.
We missed you for that yesterday.
I know. It was the most inopportune... I was dealing with Mitch. He was trying to get me on to do it. But it was like right when I was driving through construction, going up to Prescott and all these other things. Yeah, it wasn't the greatest time.
Gambo, his energy took a big hit yesterday. I mean, he really wanted to do the, and what does that mean for the Pelicans?
Luke Robbins couldn't step up. He did the, we got a bet, Babalug.
Gambo refused.
Oh, wow.
You're his.
That means something.
It is you too.
That's touching.
Said, this is a Jordan thing. This is a Jordan only thing.
Wow.
And now that you're the voice of the Northern Arizona Suns, there are going to be times this year where it's just going to get missed.
Well, what I'll do now that I know that was the situation, I'll just pre-record one in advance. With that night's opponent,
that's a fantastic.
And then just have it for the tech to play at their leisure.
That's a fantastic.
I'm an ideas man, Bernie. That's what I do.
You're coming up with these things. That is a great idea. How come we never thought of that? I don't know.
Technology, huh?
I know. Yeah, it's interesting. It's incredible the things you come up with. The Cardinals injury report for this game coming up. Are the two biggies from Pittsburgh's perspective? James Conner. Out. Not going to play. We knew that yesterday. Kind of ruled himself out. Juju Smith-Schuster. Out. He was announced as out today. What's interesting from the Cardinals' perspective for this game, and this will just make you want to tear a chunk of your hair right out of your own head if you were so inclined to do so, on the same week that they cut Tremaine Brock, not bench him, not decide internally that they're going to limit his snaps or anything like that, just flat out cut him. And the Tennessee Titans picked him up like 2 days later. Ooh,
like, are you kidding me?
Right.
Not even 2 days later, the next day.
It was the next day.
Yeah.
On the same week that they do that, after not being limited in practice at all on Wednesday or Thursday, Byron Murphy and Kevin Peterson are both questionable for the Cardinals on Sunday. That drives me crazy. Crazy. You know, or it's they traded Corey Cunningham to the New England Patriots for a 6th-round pick and then started having all these injuries at tackle, right tackle in particular. It's like, I bet you wish you had that guy back, right? And it's I do wonder if there is a bet you wish you had Tremaine Brock back moment going on over there, depending on the availability of two key secondary guys for you.
It just further muddies up the reasoning why the Cardinals did that. Because when it did went down, Gambo got on the horn like he always does, and he wasn't good for the organization. Or I can't remember what the exact phrasing of it was.
Wasn't a good fit.
We're in week 13.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a good fit. Now, at this point, at this juncture, you figured out that he wasn't a good fit. It took you that long? I mean, It just goes back again to something that you guys were talking about on the day that he was released with Tremaine Brock, is that it feels like whenever there is a bad moment for the Cardinals this season, there is this immediate reaction to do something.
Yeah.
To say that, well, at least we did something. Right or wrong, if it was the right decision or not, at least we did something. And that's really what this feels like now, especially with today's injury report.
Now, obviously, there's stuff going on behind the scenes, possibly stuff going on behind the scenes of which we are just not aware and we will never be made privy to. Perhaps something was said. Perhaps something was done. Perhaps, and maybe it'll come out, maybe it won't. Maybe there was a blow up. Maybe, and we're just speculating here, but in the absence of any real answers with what happened.
But that happens all the time in the NFL and any professional sports team. And that doesn't mean that you then release the player.
And that's kind of the problem, is that if you start setting yourself up with this precedent that you're going to cut a guy every time he does something that isn't copacetic within the team organ, then you're giving guys a license to give themselves a one-way ticket out of here if they want it. I mean, especially,
I know this is a hypothetical because we're not sure if Brock did say or do anything, but especially when the man in charge of making these decisions has some own indiscretions in his own past that he was able to get a second chance or a third chance with. But yet for a player, it's, and once again, we don't know the severity and we're just spitballing here.
Yeah.
But if there actually was something, oh, nope, get rid of him immediately.
Yeah. This game coming up, it's okay, so what you have here in looking at the Steelers, you've got a couple things going down. One, you're obviously going to have a crap ton of Pittsburgh Steelers fans at the game.
I'm pegging it at 70 to 80% Steelers fans.
Wow.
Because think about it. The Cardinal season, especially last week, it feels like it's on life support.
Pretty much.
If you're a Cardinal season ticket holder, this is the game where you can earn your money back by selling your tickets.
You're Mortimer Duke from trading.
This is a high-demand game, not for Cardinal fans.
Turn the machines back on!
Yeah. But for Steelers West fans, this is still a high demand game.
Yeah.
So ticket prices, you can make your money back.
Yeah, because they're playing for something. Obviously, they're neck and neck.
Weren't, it's the Steelers.
It's the Steelers. So you're going to have that fact. Boy, 70 to 80%.
That might be high, but I'm just thinking.
I think it's going to be over 50-50. I think it'll definitely be
over 50-50.
The majority will be Steeler fans. I just don't know how
the
much.
The Seahawks game was like 60-40.
Yeah.
Seattle. So if that was Seattle, I mean, who knows what this could look like.
See, that going on, you've got an embattled defensive coordinator for the Arizona Cardinals going up against an offense with no Juju, no James Conner, although this running back they've got now in Pittsburgh, whose name just kind of flew out of my head there for a second. Thank you, Benny Snell. I was thinking of Blake Snell, but I'm like, no, that's the pitcher with the Rays. Not Benny Snell, who's been running like a crazy man these last couple of weeks. That might not be that much of a downgrade. But no Juju, no James Conner, third-string quarterback, but up against a defense that has just been torched by everybody they've played.
Yeah.
Terrible by every metric, by every measure, all year long. Worst defense in the NFL by a lot of statistics. Then on the flip side of that coin, you've got an offense that I know is going to be eager to prove how false last weekend was, how that's not us, no, that's not who we are. They're going up against a defense that has been the best in the league since week three by just about every measure out there known to humankind. The Pittsburgh Steelers have dominated defensively since week three. Strength versus strength, weakness versus weakness. I'm not sure how to gauge this game coming up on Sunday.
I would say the only area of strength that is in favor of Arizona is the quarterback position.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's, you know, the Duck Delvin's been pretty good in his own right. So you lay it out like that. And a few segments ago, we were talking about expected wins and how many wins do we think the Cardinals can get in these last four. I said that I think that they can win one of these two games against Pittsburgh or Cleveland. You lay out the facts the way you just did, it sounds like an unwinnable game for Arizona. It's going to be a hostile atmosphere. It's going to be practically a road game that you're playing against a team that on paper is better than you in every single category out there. So going back to the expectations for this week only, should we be looking at it more as a moral victory type game? And if, fingers crossed, if they can keep it close, we'll feel good about it on Monday.
You know, but I think there's something else going on here, too, and I'm falling prey to the same thing. It's hard not to look at this game on Sunday. If last weekend had never happened against the Rams, right? So let's say, take out the eraser and erase the Rams game. It didn't
happen. Right from the bye week into this?
It didn't happen. You played the 49ers tough. You had a bye week, and you're hosting the Pittsburgh Steelers at home. And I just laid out the case for everything that's going on. Kyler Murray versus that defense, but that offense against the Cardinals defense. We would feel a lot better about their chances to win this game had the Rams game never happened.
Absolutely.
So how eager are they to prove that the Rams game was a false narrative, was not who they are and not what they are? Because the Cardinals team I saw 2 weeks ago against the 49ers, that team can give the Steelers a game. They can.
Especially at home.
That team that played the Niners on Halloween night, that team can give the Steelers a game. Which are we getting, the Rams version of the Cardinals, or are we getting the 49ers version of the Cardinals? Because the 49ers version can beat the Pittsburgh Steelers at home. They can.
And I know it's not exactly apples to apples comparison, but remember back to last December with this Cardinal team and how terrible they were rolling into December. They pulled, and granted, Green Bay ultimately fired their head coach.
Yeah.
But they pulled a win on the road at Lambeau Field out of their backside that no one saw coming. So, I mean, like you said, it's so hard to predict these last month of the games because there's so many different variables that you have to keep in track with.
Speaking of things that we saw coming or didn't see coming, Igor Kokoschkov said, oh, yeah, I saw it coming. You know what he's talking about, but he said it out loud, and we'll tell you about it next here on the Burns and Gambo Show. Igor Kokoschkov, and we all know the story by now. We lived the story, for goodness sakes. Igor Kokoschkov, of course, was Luka Doncic's coach for the Slovenian.
Slovenian, yep.
Okay. Right? And when the Suns had the number one pick overall in the draft, it was we discussed and debated it. We didn't debate what the Suns were going to do with the pick for very long. We established pretty early on it was going to be DeAndre Ayton. And as much as we tried to manufacture a debate, there was never much of a debate to manufacture. It was always going to be DeAndre Ayton. But always with the presence of Igor, there was always sort of this, how hard is he pushing? How much does he want him? How much say does he have in it? How much say should he have in it? And I think most reasonable minds agreed he shouldn't have that much say in it. His first year head coach, he's never been a head coach in this league.
Yeah.
Doesn't throw a lot of weight around with him on a topic like this.
A little too close to the situation in one category.
And might be a little too close to the situation to provide a reasonably unbiased opinion on what they should do. So he was asked via some media outlet that required, so I'm assuming it's an international,
it had to be an international media outlet
because it required a translation. But via Google Translate, Kokoschkov, when asked about Doncic and how the Suns didn't choose Doncic, but they chose DeAndre Ayton, Kokoschkov said, quote, unfortunately, I cannot answer that question because of a professional code. But when you have already asked me, I will tell you that I sleep peacefully and peaceably, close quote.
I don't think Google Translate got the full gist of it, but yeah.
In other words, Kokoschkov sleeps very well at night. I have no regrets. I said my piece about Luka Doncic. They knew how I felt about Luka Doncic, and I don't have any problem sleeping at night. My conscience is clear.
See, but there's a couple of things immediately come to mind. First of all, this is not a surprise. And I know you said during show prep when we were talking about this that, well, you know, it's easy now for all of the people in the Doncic camp to come out and say, well, yeah, I knew he was going to be this good. I don't think that's the case with Igor. I mean, it's not a big leap of suspendability to think that, of course, this guy wanted Luka Doncic here. But how much did he actually push it? And to your point, he didn't have much of a say.
Right.
But I can't see Igor pounding the table, even if he did have say, saying Luka's got to be the guy. That's just not in his DNA.
Igor barely speaks above a whisper.
Exactly.
When he's in a room with I can't imagine he might have been told right out of the shoot, hey,
it's not going to happen.
Don't bother. It's not going to happen.
Don't waste your breath.
We're taking DeAndre Ayton.
It does make me wonder, though, if in this parallel universe, had the Suns taken Luka, what does the Suns look like now? In terms of Igor, I would assume Igor's still the coach this season.
I would think, yes. I would think there would have been enough. I would have thought there would have been enough of a win turnaround to allow Igor to keep his job. I don't know necessarily
of a win total, but last year during the regular season, after it was that, what was it, in January, where they went on that huge losing streak, and
yeah,
it was basically
like 17 straight, I think.
Igor's going to get fired, and then they beat Miami, and it kind of saved his job. I don't know if we would have had those type of moments, and I don't know if one player like Luka can change that much, but we're seeing what he's doing in his second season with a coach that knows and understands how to use him. I'm not saying the Suns would be where, you know, a playoff or at the top of the Western Conference, but I think that there would have been enough positives last year for Igor to keep his job.
So really, when it comes down to it, and I've heard somebody else on the station kind of frame the conversation like this before, so this is not an original thought. The question really comes down to, who would you rather have, DeAndre Ayton and Monty Williams, or Igor Kokoschkov and Luka Doncic?
Luka Doncic and Igor. Because what is easier to find, a head coach or a generational talented player?
Right.
So you go with the guy that's more difficult to find in Luka, and then, I mean, because even if Igor had kept his job, they had drafted Luka, Suns are doing adequate enough, there's a certain point in time where Igor's going to get fired. Yeah. It's inevitable.
Well, take that for data, because in New York, the Knicks have fired head coach David Fizdale. They had lost 8 straight games. They lost to Denver last night in embarrassing fashion by 38 points. 4-18 on the season. They had been humiliated a couple of nights ago against the Milwaukee Bucks as well. He was 21-83 in less than 2 seasons as the Knicks coach. He is still owed the remainder of his 4-year, $22 million contract.
Good decision there, James Dolan.
James Dolan is just seriously the worst owner. Well, and it's the worst owner in sports. He's so bad.
It's funny that we brought these two stories up in the same context. Like, as bad as Suns fans might feel that they drafted DeAndre Ayton over Luka Doncic, at least we're not the Knicks.
At least we're not the Knicks.
And I'll be honest, with all of this Fizdale stuff that has popped up today, the thought crossed my mind. It feels good as a Suns fan to not be the team that's the first one to be firing the coach, or yep, to be having questions about, is this the right guy? Is he going to last more than a half season or a full season?
Ramona Shelburne on the jump today.
Now he can get away from
I don't think
situation.
They have decided who the interim coach is going to be. My feeling is that it was going in this direction.
Right.
And I don't think they wanted to do this soon. The question is, whoever you, when you make this change, you want to have everything lined up and decide right who the interim is going to be, and you want to tee them up for success. But when you lose by 37 at home and the way things have been going, it just felt close this morning, at least. And obviously it was.
They did. That's a somewhat dated soundbite. They have named assistant Mike Miller as the interim head coach. So he'll be taking over there. Dolan is, other than Dan Snyder, I can't imagine there is an owner of a franchise that you would choose to not have being the owner of your organization more so than James Dolan of the New York Knicks. I mean, I know Suns fans.
I was going to say Suns fans are screaming in their car right now.
Robert Sarver, I'm not saying this to make nicey nice with Robert. I think I'd rather have Robert Sarver as the owner of my team versus James Dolan.
Well, just look at this past. Look at the coaching situations for both those teams. I know there has been numerous failures by Robert Sarver and the Suns, but the Monty Williams hire seems like it is knocked out of the park, right? I don't see James Dolan being able or being willing to have a guy like Monty Williams. A guy, hey, here's a 5-year deal, and we still don't know what the future holds for Monty, but right now it certainly looks like he's going to get more than a year or two here. I don't see the Knicks having that type of patience, and I don't see other coaches. I mean, Monty Williams picked the Suns over the Lakers, and look at what the Lakers are doing now. Would anyone in their right mind be picking the Knicks over any other option that you really have out there?
That becomes a really tough ask, hiring anybody to be the head coach over there. Steve Keim, very optimistic, very bullish about the upcoming offseason. Are we buying it? We'll talk about it next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Jordan Bird filling in for Gambo.